Hi, everyone. Good to be back together for another Base Camp Campfire Conversation. And tonight there are four of us that are going to talk in front of you, and we would love for you to ask a question either on the chat line or by raising your hand if you're on the phone by hitting star two. But we have a friend of ours. He's a Base Camp member. His name is Jerry Smook, and he's been in Base Camp for a while. In fact, when we met him, or at least the time I most remember meeting him and being with him was the December 2011, I think, retreat we did out here in Colorado, the Exploration Calling Intensive weekend. And those of us who got a chance to meet him right away said, okay, this is a man we want to walk with, we want to know well. So we have Jerry on the phone, and we could easily take a couple hours to go through his story, but what we've asked him to do is to allow us to hear about a very specific aspect of his story, and that is his career as a commercial airline pilot, and for many years now with American Airlines. You know, I was going to say most of us aren't pilots. The funny thing is that the two other hosts on the phone are pilots, so I'm the only non-pilot. So on the phone, that is, and there are others in base camp. So anyway, Jerry, we are really looking forward to talking with you and hearing some of your story.
Oh, well, I'm happy to share it. It'll be a pleasure. I'm looking forward to it.
So I'll tell you what, jump right in with, because we want to talk about this part of your story, jump right in with how were you kind of introduced to the idea of flying, the love of flying, the experience of flying?
Gosh, you know, my dad flew little airplanes as a general aviation pilot.
Did you hear what he said there, Gary? Little airplanes. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Gary.
Oh, it sounds like you, Sam. But even in your later age, you're still in the little airplanes. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, no. Hey, you know what? If I could still be in little airplanes right now, I would love it. It's great flying little airplanes. There's nothing like it. But he used to take me out to the airport. I mean, those are some of my earliest memories are out at the airport there. And he'd take me up flying with him, you know, and most of our flights lasted about an hour. We used to go out in the local area around Geneva here, just west of Chicago, and look down on the farmers' fields and, you know, just enjoy being up in the air. And, of course, when we got back, this was before they had line boys. We used to taxi the airplane up to the fuel pit there and pump the gas ourselves before they had self-service at the service stations even. So, yeah, that was a couple of years ago, but that's kind of where it started, and it just kept going. It's kind of like a disease, a terminal disease. Some guys have it and some don't, and I guess I got the terminal disease, loving flying.
You know what's interesting about that, Jerry, was that it was one of your first memories. There's, I think, so important, some of those first memories, something wakes up in us when that happens. And when I tell my story, I remember my first memories were standing up in my dad's lap in a DC-4. We were crossing the ocean. And I had to be my first memory. And so, that's really interesting.
So, okay, so you enjoyed, fell in love with flying, so keep us going in your journey with that.
Well, you know, I'd go up with Dad since I was a little guy, and then I think I was probably 14, 15 years old. I started taking some lessons out at the airport there. Dad belonged to a flying club, and, you know, of course, I belonged to the flying club de facto, too. And started taking lessons. I soloed when I was 16. And then, you know, I'm a little foggy here. I'm not exactly sure what happened, but I didn't get my license when I turned 17. I did take a little break from the flying net. I'm not exactly sure. I don't remember exactly what happened, but it turned out to be just probably a really good thing because I got my licenses when I was in school. I went to Purdue University and pursued flying there as a course of study, and I was able to start there from their ground zero, intro to flying kind of, so to speak, course. And so I went through their program, which was very good for me because it develops just some further discipline in the cockpit.
So, Jerry, this is Sam asking, how many, I mean, So you have a degree in aviation of some sort.
Yeah, I don't, you know, it's probably a BS degree, but, you know, who knows what that means, right?
And so what kind of classes, I mean, what would they teach you beyond just what you would get at a flight school if you went to a local flight school?
Sure, yeah, no. Well, we spent the first 2 years acquiring most of our licenses and ratings there. And then the next 2 years, we spent learning about big airplane systems and cockpit crew resource management.
Yep.
Weather, maps, you know, how to chart out longer range flights, and giving us a good foundation because that's kind of how the world worked. Now, with that foundation, I can go into my airplane now and I can plug in the coordinates, you know, like your GPS, and I kind of have a good idea, a solid foundation of what's going on with the GPS. And so if it were to get off... Hopefully I'd kind of be able to recognize that and have a clue. But, you know, I do have a foundational knowledge of how that works. So if it wasn't for school, I wouldn't have that depth of a knowledge and understanding of what's going on there.
So, Jerry, while you were in school and you were going through this training, were you just loving it, eating it up, like, boy, this fascinates me? Or were you a little skeptical back then, or was it difficult for you, or what was your experience?
No, man, you guys talk about being in the sweet spot. I was there. I mean, I ate, slept, drank. I was invested in what I was doing, and it was just a great time. You know, the first 2 years, you're in the airplane 3, 4, 5 days a week. You're out flying, and then the second 2 years, you're in the simulator of a big airplane, you know.
Oh,
you're
you
still
are.
Flying. Oh, yeah, you're in the simulator. We had a DC-6 that they used for the juniors, and then the seniors, they had a DC-8 simulator that we got our flight engineer certificate in. And when you weren't being the flight engineer, you were being the co-pilot and the captain, and you're still working on the crew concept of flying, because that's much different than being out there solo, single pilot, you know, flying single pilot. You know, it's a multi-person airplane. It's a crew of three, and how do three people work together in an airplane?
And they're teaching all that in the school.
Yep, that's part of what you're learning out there.
So you flew small planes. What got you interested in, I mean, I'm sort of backing up a little bit, but was there a trigger event that got you interested in moving from small 2- and 4-person planes to flying commercial airliners, jets?
I guess I should back up the story a little bit. I think it was probably my junior year. They had a career night at the high school. And so I went. My dad taught at the high school. And he, you know, he went there with me. And I don't know if Dad kind of ushered me in or if I knew where this room was and I knew who was in the room, but there was an American Airlines chief pilot in one of the rooms. And a chief pilot is a pilot. Yeah, he's just kind of the supervisor over the rest of the guys in the base. And so, anyway, this guy lived in Geneva, came to the career night, and I walked in the room, and I didn't go in any of the rooms. I sat there for 3 hours and talked with him, and that's all we did was talk airplanes.
Okay.
And so at the end of the night, you know, my dad is coming around going, hey, you know, I think it's probably time to go. Mr. Miser probably needs to get home here. And John said, you know, Jerry, why don't you give me a call? Here's my number. And come on over sometime, and we'll talk some more. And so from that, you know, basically what he told me was, Jerry, you can take your hobby, what you're doing as a hobby right now, and you can make a career out of that. And I was all in. Mm. I can do this for a living? You got to be kidding me. Way cool. I had no idea. And so, you know, I did go over to his house, and he was like a mentor to me. And we kind of mapped things out, and, well, I should say he mapped things out. He strongly encouraged me to attend Purdue. He did encourage me to check out some other schools as well, which I did. But, you know, I did go down to Purdue there and pursue the education there. So, yeah, and there, down there, I didn't realize this up front, but one of his colleagues – had retired on a medical issue and was teaching down at Purdue. So there was another American Airlines guy down there. So we were getting good airline stuff when I was down there.
So, okay, I'm just so intrigued with your story that you were captured by this, you know, deep curiosity and love for this, where you could sit there for 3 hours and, you know, had no desire to go anywhere else, and just how it captured your heart. That's just really cool to hear. Yeah.
Mm. Well, yeah. And I'm fascinated by this guy who just willingly opened his life to say, come in and let me talk about it. I mean, as you said, he mentored you, and that's just a tremendous thing that he did.
Oh, yeah.
It is. You know, kind of the interesting thing, and I think I'm just kind of coming to understand it a little bit, was it was a short-term mentoring thing. I mean, he didn't mentor me for more than a few months, mm-hmm. but the huge impact that had in my life, you know. First of all, he told me, hey, this is something you can do. You know, and then second of all, he sat down with me and, you know, helped me map out what it might look like.
Mm.
Okay, so let me jump in for a second and say, and ask you, Jeff, what's your reaction to this part of the story so far, you also being a commercial airline pilot? What are your thoughts as you've heard this much of a story?
Well, you know, just on the mentor, what's really interesting, I remember when we had Paul Stanley on, one of my questions, he's a great mentor to men, and one of my questions to him is, how long do you work with a man? And, you know, he puts a time limit on it. It wasn't like he would just mentor him forever, and they would work on something for a period of time, and then he would move them on. And what's interesting is that's what it sounds like this mentor did for you, Jerry, is he brought you in, worked on a very specific area, and did his job. And did it really well, and only needed 2 months with you on it, and it set you on your course. Is that pretty much what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, really, that is it. I mean, I did have contact with him subsequent to that, but you know, he got me going. I think, yeah. After I got out of college, he sent me down to American Airlines. And introduced me to the lady who was doing the pilot recruitment at the time. And everybody knew her. And I walked in there, you know, here's a kid right out of college, right? Talk about bringing your kid to work day. That was me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and she was very gracious because I didn't have the experience that they were looking for at the time. And so I went down there and she said, You do understand that I can't offer you a position right now. And I said, well, no, I didn't know that, but, you know, I certainly understand. I don't have the experience that of the guys that you have coming through your door right now, because I can look around and see. And so she said, you know, it's great to meet you. I look forward to keeping up with you, and I would just ask you to keep us posted on your career. And so I did that. And every time I got another 100 hours of flight time, they got a letter. And every time I got another rating, they got a letter. Every time I got another job, they got a letter.
You're serious about this. This is great. I can't believe this.
Well, and so the only reason that they hired me at the end of this deal
is they wanted to quit getting all those letters.
Well, yes, you know, when I went down there, they had every piece of mail that I sent them.
Because
They had a file on me, and my file was by far thicker than anybody else's ever down there.
Wow.
I think that's a fabulous lesson right there, just sort of the value of persistence and stuff. Anyway,
well,
I mean, keep going, but that's really fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's kind of how it happened for me. So, but, you know, that's kind of, we're skipping around here a little bit. But, yeah, they, you know, I did a lot of writing during that time.
Wow.
Okay, so now in the pursuit of this, how about your first flying job?
Well, that was really at school. The school invested in us very heavily those first 2 years, and like I said, they really instilled a lot of cockpit discipline there. And so after I got my flight instructor rating, that's where I went to work, was for the school. Didn't pay real good, but, you know, I didn't care. I was flying airplanes, and I really loved that environment. Instructing at the school was great because the kids there in the program were highly motivated. If you asked them to do something, they would come back with it done.
Are you talking about at Purdue?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So as you're working your way through Purdue, you're also teaching?
Yes, as a junior and a senior. Uh-huh.
That's brilliant.
Oh, okay.
Mm.
Okay,
and
now
so,
what
you
about...
Know, for the,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, for the school, you know, here they've got these young guys that are indoctrinated in their way of doing things, that are excited about it, and they're teaching, you know, some beginner students how to go about the discipline that Purdue was training into their people. So it's kind of self-perpetuating.
Okay, so at this point in time, you're still single, that's correct?
Yep.
And you're about how old right now?
Let's see, 21, 22.
Okay, 21, 22. Okay, now take us to the next part of your journey outside of Purdue and instructing there. What was the next thing?
Well, I spent about a year instructing out here just at my local airport out of DuPage. And, you know, that was – I enjoyed the school environment much more. The students were, I think, a little bit more motivated. Out here, you know, out in the real world, people were doing it as a hobby or for one reason or another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that was okay, but I did that for about a year. I ended up going to the Grand Canyon and flying the Grand Canyon for a season. That was in 1984. And I was based out of Page, Arizona. And it was the last year that you could actually fly below the rim. Now, Jeff is probably cringing, as so is Sam there. So it wasn't real smart to fly below the rim.
I don't even know what you're talking about, so Jeff may be cringing. I'm just pondering.
No, I mean, that's what was flying for me when I was a kid, flying under bridges, you know, anything like that was just a way to go.
Are you serious?
I grew up in Jersey, you know, so, but, yeah. So go ahead, Jerry, it's your story. You're flying below the rim. So, in other words, he's flying into the canyon when he's giving tours, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, but the canyon is huge. I mean, this is
Is this even legal?
It's several miles. What's that?
Is this even legal?
Well,
sure.
It's not now, and in 1984, that was the last year you could do it.
Okay.
Of course, we didn't know that was coming at the time, but that was the last year that you could fly below the rim. It's become highly regulated. They have to fly certain pathways, you know, over the rim and in that airspace. It's very highly regulated, so we didn't have to deal with that when I was doing it.
So
you know,
what year
was
that?
1984.
Okay.
And that was only part of the work that we did. Most of the work that we did was with river rafters. The rafters would put in at Lee's Ferry at the base of Glen Canyon Dam. They'd take about 10 days, 2 weeks to go down, about halfway down their way to Lake Mead there. And then they'd get a mule ride up the canyon wall or a helicopter ride up to the rim. And we'd land on the north rim in some rancher's field on a dirt strip. Sometimes we'd have to chase the cows off the runway to land there. But we'd land, and we'd shuttle the old people out and bring the new people in. The guide would get a couple-day break there at the rancher's lodge. And then they'd continue the rest of the way down the canyon for another 10 days to 2 weeks and get the rest of the bottom portion of the Colorado River through the Grand Canyon there. So that was a lot of our work.
Wow.
We'd shuttle the people either back to Vegas or Flagstaff or even back to Page. Then we did tours of Lake Powell, and we used to run the mail for the marinas on Lake Powell there and tours out to Monument Valley as well.
And what kind of planes were these?
Cessna 207s.
Oh, they were small planes.
Well,
yeah,
it's a nice-sized Cessna, right?
Yeah.
You're carrying 7-8 people in there, right?
Yep. Yep, that's it.
Yeah.
I think we had them configured for 7.
you know, it's interesting, Jerry. I flew for Monument Valley Air Service. I flew Indians off the reservations up there in Cessna 206s. I was flying in the same area. I was probably doing it in like 80, about 1980.
Okay.
I was up there.
Nate,
Okay, so Jerry, because of time, now take us to the next level of flying for you.
Well, that job came to an end, and I ended up down in Dallas. I had some friends that said, hey, come on down here, look for a job. There's got to be a job down here around Dallas. And I went down there, and I got hired by an outfit that had two small commuter-type airplanes, and they were supposed to get two more. And I was in the class that was going to fly the two more airplanes, which they never got. But they were very gracious, and they put us to work in the ramp, throwing bags onto their airplanes. Well, on a Thursday, one of the guys who was in my class to fly those two new airplanes that they were supposed to get came off the airplane and said, hey, I just got hired by Air Virginia. Well, there was another guy on the ramp with me, and, oh, where's that? You know, and what do they fly? Well, they're in Lynchburg, Virginia, and they fly Metroliners. So Friday morning, this other guy and I arranged to get ourselves out to Lynchburg, Virginia from Dallas, Texas. And we showed up on their step and knocked on their door and said, hi, we're here to go to work for you. You know, they did one of these, you know, pull the glasses down over the end of the nose and looked at us and said, who are you? And said, well, my name's Jerry, and I hear you got a class starting, and I'd love to go to work for you. And they were very gracious, and they said, well, we're in meetings for the next couple hours here, but if you can hang around, we'll try to put together a interview board and interview you. Well, no problem. So we sat in the waiting area there for a couple hours, and sure enough, they came out and, okay, come on in. And after the interview, they said, well, we got a class starting on Monday. If you guys want to be in it, you're here. And we said, super.
Wow.
Yeah, we're there.
Wow.
Jerry,
so
you are such a go-getter. I just never knew this about you.
Well, you know, when you're desperate, you'll go to extensive measures there, right, Sam?
But listen, that's a quote worth writing down, when you're
yeah.
desperate.
Well, and I'll tell you what, when you add desperation to love of something, that's powerful, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
right.
So, okay.
So I spent a year and a half at Air Virginia, flying up and down the East Coast and in Jeff's backyard there. And after that, I got hired by American Airlines.
Because
wow.
you kept informing them of every single move in your life.
I did. I absolutely did. It was, you know, yeah, like I said, they just didn't want to hear from me anymore. That's why they hired me.
Okay, so Jerry, I'm going to jump in on this part since you mentioned American Airlines working with them. And I'd love for you to tell everyone, because it sounds like it's about this time in the story. Well, maybe not. It was when you were moving in towards becoming a captain, right, with the whole training time and the conversation with the wives. So maybe this isn't the right time to mention that story just yet. What do you think?
Oh, hey, now let's go there. I mean, this is
okay.
Everyone, I think, is ready for a good chuckle here.
Okay.
Well, I became a captain in 1993, and back then when you became a captain, they would bring you down to Dallas for charm school to teach you how to be a captain, and none of us had charm, so we must have needed it. So I'm guessing that they must have thought that I was beyond help because I didn't get that class right away. They waited 5 years to give that class to me, so they must have known that I was beyond help, that they couldn't get the charm back to me. So they bring us down, and kind of the deal with that is they bring your wife down too. And so
they need every soft influence possible, right?
they had a track for the wives, and so they're going through their program, and we're going through our program. And it was actually kind of cool for the wives because they got to fly the simulators. They took the wives into the simulators, and the wives got to fly. And so Marlis got to fly the airplane that I had checked out as a captain on. So that's pretty exciting for her. But in one of the classes that she was in, and, you know, I this is kind of a loose quote, so please forgive me, but they were telling the wives that your husbands were hired because they have certain character traits that make them very good at what they do in the cockpit, but probably don't translate real well into family life. And furthermore, on top of that, not only that, we are also going to reinforce those traits in their lives. So your life is just going to be whatever it's going to be and have a nice life.
Well, you know what, and I want you to keep telling the story. I want you to tell them about some of these traits that they see makes a great captain and so on. But I, first of all, I am so impressed that a company would be able to tell the wives, kind of give them a heads up. I think that's pretty amazing because normally you don't pay any attention to that. But so I'm impressed that they did that, but I'm also taken by the fact that the company says, oh, well, you know, we want good pilots. We're not concerned about good husbands. We're concerned about good pilots for all those other husband and wives sitting in the back of the plane. So anyway, so keep going with this story because you've told me, and I think this is an amazing story.
Well, you know, some of the silly things that we do, I mean, pilots are just anal retentive by nature. And maybe it's just me, I don't know, but I'm guessing there's other guys. Jeff, you can chime in on this. If there's a three-way switch in my house, I want it a certain way. If you mess with my switch, I'm not having a good day. You know, that's kind of how it is. So, you know, I can see it happening now. Yeah, Gary or Sam is going to come over and visit, and they're going to go into my basement, and they're going to mess with my switches and go, ha, ha, ha.
Oh, I'm not sure I want to touch your switches.
Oh, I'm going to. I'm sorry.
So,
his reaction.
Yep. So go out. Keep talking about the different things they said that are going to become pretty apparent, you know, in their relationship with their spouse because of what makes a great captain.
Well, you know, I don't know if I can remember any of the other examples. You probably have to talk to Marlis about that, and thankfully she's not home right now. You know, but one of the other things they did mention that I can think of was you either have or you're going to have a 500-pound box of soap, of hotel soaps that your husband has collected, and it's going to be in the attic. And their intentions are to take those to the homeless shelter there.
You know what, and I remember you mentioning to me some other ideas, and this is maybe more of what you realized about yourself, but the idea that, you know, you're going to react when there's an emergency and you're going to make a quick decision. You're not going to process it for a long time. It's just time to make a decision and you follow through on the decision. Wasn't that one of the things you were talking about, which can be really rough in a marriage when, you know, maybe your spouse wants to talk through something and process it for a number of days or weeks? And is that true, or am I just making that up with my own marriage?
No. I think that's just your marriage, Gary. I don't think that reflects
on you. Okay. All right. Yeah, so I was afraid I just backed myself in a corner on that one.
No, you know, we sit here and laugh about it because it really is funny, you know. But the reality of that is that is how I make decisions. That's how I look at things. And that's how I've looked at things for 25 years. And unfortunately for Marlis and fortunately for me, she's still around. You know, and God bless her because she's a very gracious woman. They have put up with me. Because we actually wrote this out and we sent it off to Hugh, Gary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And as I looked at that, you know, I had a chuckle. But then after I chuckled, I had to realize, you know, there's a lot of pain on both sides of that. Because when you mess with my switches and I'm not having a good day now, I'm feeling disrespected and you're not registering with what's important to me, you know, because those switches are important. Now, yeah, is that a really silly, stupid thing? Yeah, it really is. But when I'm in the cockpit, it's kind of an important thing that all the switches are in the right spot. You know, but unfortunately, I didn't have the language of the heart and the understanding to know that my work life and what I do there and the things that make me good there, you know, they really don't translate well into the home. And, yeah, I heard that when they told the wives that, and I could laugh. But there's actually some pain behind that, too, because my wife had to live with me. And, quite frankly, I wouldn't have lived with me for 25 years the way I am, you know, because it's hard.
So, Jerry, what did you learn about yourself going to the calling expiration in December there?
You know, I think one of the greatest, Dan was my facilitator, and one of the greatest things that the guy pointed out to me.
For that.
And I've been into counseling for it, so yes, you're right. I was referred. I didn't have any people on my picture exercise, and there weren't a lot of people in my life, you know, and we'd have to go back into my story to kind of to unpack that a little bit, and I know that's out of the scope of where we're going tonight, but I didn't have any people there, and we didn't unpack that then, but it was brought to my attention that, hey, Jerry, there's no people in your pictures here. And with what we're hearing about your life, there needs to be some guys around you. And with what, and this is pretty much Sam talking, although the other guys chimed in too. What Sam told me was, you need to get some guys around you, and you need to be investing in them, and you need to open your life up to them because you have something to offer to them that they need. And I'd never heard that before. No one had ever told me that before, and that just really spoke to my heart because, yeah, that's what I'd like to do. You know, I enjoyed the instructing because I was with somebody else and I was pouring something into them. And I love that aspect of it. That's what I liked about the instructing when I was at school. And so, you know, we're looking at having this event in Chicagoland here. And it's caused me, forced me, to get together with some guys. And I just got together with a guy earlier this week. And Gary, thank you so much. For agreeing to come to Chicago, because if you hadn't, I wouldn't have gotten together with this guy. I would have had no reason to contact him and reconnect with him. But there's just some serious stuff that he's been facing the last few years, and we just had some great time together, and hopefully he'll be coming to the event as well.
Wow.
So I'm sure I didn't answer a question. Sorry, I just kind of rambled down there. I don't know. What was the question?
No, that was good. I asked what you learned at the retreat that he went to in December. So let me ask you this, Jerry. What is it about flying, do you think, is it that you love? Do you love, you know, just the spaciousness, and if you've got to work, the cockpit's a great place, you know, and the beauty that you see, or is it the crew resource management, or is it the man and machine and learning, you know, working the systems? What is it that you love about flying?
Well, Jeff, you know, you'll probably understand this comment, but when the door closes, it's just all you, baby. That's it, you know. And, yeah, so everything you just outlined there, the last time I was out, I was snapping some pictures on the way back from, where were we coming from, San Jose. And I posted some of those on my Facebook, you know, and it's kind of fun because some people will comment on it. But I just love the beauty, to see the beauty. I love working with another person next to me, you know, and if there's something I can offer them, it's not an instructor kind of situation, but it's great to sit there and go, hey, you know, do you know how to tell where our wingtip is right now? No. Well, check out those seams on the pavement there. If you go outside that second seam there, the wingtip's going to be just outside that second seam, you know, and they turn their head and they look out, and, oh, wow, cool, I didn't know that. Hey, you know, thanks for telling me that. That's something that's really useful. You know, so I don't know, I just love doing that little kind of stuff, working with another guy. I don't even have to be instructing him, you know, I don't have to teach him something. Well, and, in fact, there's very little that I could teach anybody. I mean, at this level of the game, you know, we're all pretty much professionals, and it's just great to work with someone doing what you love.
Oh, okay, I've got a question for you. Did any of your cockpit experiences change after the retreat with the guy next to you? You know how it is on a three-day trip, you know. You guys start talking, and you get to know the guy sitting next to you. And did you begin to look at life a little bit different as after hearing their story, as you're getting to know them, armed with what you experienced in that small intensive group?
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you know the questions change too, in
yeah.
some of the dialogue. Yeah, absolutely. You know, so as they're telling their story, you know, I'm trying to drill in a little deeper and go, well, tell me about that. You know, and yeah, so it's been great. you know, because I've been able to drill down and be armed that way and go, wow, this guy's heart is really cool. I mean, you know, he's got this passion about something here.
Yeah, you know, I think that's another way to really to work with men. What a great environment to do that, you know. And I think about that if I go back to work now, I'm with a guy for 3-4 days, and I think it's going to be pretty interesting. We'll have a lot of questions for him, and we'll be able to take questions, new questions to him that I never did before, I think.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I, you know, Jeff, I'd love to be in a cockpit with you. I think that'd be super.
Yeah, yeah, I would
be,
like to know.
I think
yeah.
I'd be a little bit afraid to be in the back of the airplane with you two guys flying it and not paying attention because you're having so much fun with each other.
Yeah, well, I want to know where the damn wingtip is, you know? I mean, if Jerry showed me where the damn wingtip, I'd probably be shocked and be like, you're kidding me, you know? And it'd be fun.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
You know, one of the things that strikes me, Jerry, is you and Jeff have such a different work environment. When I was at work, I worked with the same people every day. I mean, it was the same clients and it was the same colleagues, but part of what you're talking about is you will have a crew for 3 days maybe, but you may not see that same pilot or that flight attendant for another 3 months. I don't know. I'm, you know, fill in the blank here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I might not see a guy for a year or two.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
just so different from our lives.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
From so many other people's lives.
Well, you mm-hmm. know, and I don't know. When we're with a guy for 3-4 days, you know, you're just with the guy. You know, you're going to be with him all day long, and you're in a room the size of a broom closet.
Hmm.
And that's where you're going to spend your time. So, yeah, it's pretty close.
Do guys and women, do people talk together much in the flight?
Oh, yeah. We're talking all the time together.
Amazing.
oh, yeah.
Sometimes I talk to myself because I like the answers better. But, yeah, most of the time it's with the other person.
See, Jerry, a funny story on my end. I flew a 4-day trip with a guy one time, and at the end of it, he gave me a card on how to get saved. And I better pick up my behavior a little bit at work here or something, you know? And that was good. That was good.
So, yeah. So Jerry, as we're drawing to a close here on our time, let me ask you this. What do you think God is up to with you right now at this moment in your life? As you're flying still, all your experience, as you've gone through the calling exploration intensive and you've maybe gotten a little more clarity and focus, what is just your sense of what he's up to with you and the effect of your life?
Wow, great question. You know, I had a sense, and this is a bunch of years ago, and I don't know how long ago exactly it was, but I had the sense that there was going to be something for me to retire into. And so right now I want to finish well at American Airlines. And I've got 8 to 13 years to go. In the next 8 to 13 years, I am just excited to learn and invest in whatever God's bringing across my path to equip me for what he has for me when I retire. It's a mandatory retirement at age 65. I may go earlier. I may go to 65. I don't know what that looks like at that end of it. But I'm very excited for what he's got planned out for me after that.
You know what, we did Jerry, I don't know if you heard it, but quite a while back we did a campfire conversation with Mark Haskins on, wasn't it called the Ovation Years?
Yeah.
Something like that, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and the idea of preparing for when this season is over and now you're kind of coming back out for the ovation, for you being called out. And it just, I mean, you just kind of brought that subject up again. I would like to tell the guys as we're finishing up here a couple things. Yeah, Jerry, I love the fact that Jerry Smook and Jerry Comfort are working together on doing this Chicagoland Exploration Calling Intensive Weekend. And there is a lot of work in that. And I, Jerry, I love the way you are just connecting with men as much as you can, mm-hmm. getting into their story and helping them understand that they can find some more clarity if they come to this retreat, but not just doing it for that reason. It feels like it is very much a part of your heart. And
yeah.
I have, you know, we all have a greater passion that you are living out of the desires of your heart more than you're promoting a retreat, that this is actually part of who you are, and I really believe it is. So we do want to encourage you guys out there. You know, I don't know of anybody that doesn't know somebody that lives around the Chicago area. So if you do, boy, connect Jerry Smook to that person in some way or just encourage them to go. So, Jerry, thank you for doing that as well. You've taken on a lot. You've taken on another job when you're home in between the 80 hours or so you're working anyway a week.
Well, you know, I can't tell you what a pleasure it's been to connect with guys and to realize, you know, I think that's a part of that ovation, the ovation years. I don't know where that's going to end up or exactly what that looks like, but it's going to be investing in people. And it's just been a real treat to get together with some guys, listen to their stories. And, you know, I don't have any answers for them, but it sure is great to hear their stories, connect with them, and just go, hey, you know what, this is the journey, and I'm glad to be walking with you.
You know, Jerry, what's fascinating about this whole process that we're on is that it's not about giving people answers, but it is about helping them understand some of the journey, some of the process that they're in. And now you, with your experience, are going to be able to speak into that. And really, that's the beautiful way of going about working with people is look more at process, you know. And then maybe, you know, you have some suggestions for them on, well, you know, your story is really important. You know, what you love to do is really important, right? Because so many people are doing what they've been told to do or what they should do, not so much what they want to do. And, you know, so that sort of advice of working with people, that process is obviously starting right now with you. I don't see that happening at 65. It's clearly happening right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you know, I guess my feeling is there's some equipping to be done yet, and I'm all about that. I'm looking forward to that. You know, to give me better questions to ask, to engage in a guy's story even better and deeper and to help him along. So, yeah, I think there's I'm excited about where I'm at now, but I'm excited in the process and the journey and where we're going.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. Me and Jerry might be working for the same airline here in a couple months here. And we had a great conversation about bringing this message to American Airlines about working with guys who are retiring and going, hey, you know, we'd love to get them for their last ground school for an hour and say, guess what, guys, there is so much more, you know, and helping them go from a successful career to living significantly from their heart would be a real challenge, I think, for us.
And I love, and this is what you guys have been talking about, and Jeff, you keep bringing this up. I love the fact, Jerry, that you are simply bringing what you have more clarity on about what you love, the brilliance, the weightiness of your life to where you are right now. You're not saying, gosh, if I could change my work, then I could do this. You're simply bringing, you know, your interest in men's hearts and taking them on a journey. You're doing that more where you are now. And then, of course, then God can say, that's great. Now let's go take that somewhere else if he wants to. So that's so good. So thank you for doing this tonight with us. Thank you.
It's been a real treat and a real pleasure. So thank you for having me. And thanks for going easy on me, too.
Well, we're just bringing you in easily. So, hey, I just want to tell everybody, too, while we're on the phone, listen, I sent out an email to all you guys about this Sheer Beauty retreat in April. And the reason we're doing this is because some of you guys said, you just need to do this for my wife, and it needs to be a certain environment. So I want to encourage you, do everything you can to get your wife to this and try to get one of her close friends to go with her, because I know you said she's not going to go alone. She'll only go with a friend. So want you to do that. Here's the amazing thing is, you know, I just really posted that today on Facebook and some other places, and already three women have signed up.
Wow,
this would,
awesome,
this would take
Gary.
3 months before a man would sign up. So,
yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely.
Anyway, love for you to jump in. So.
Yeah.
Well, you guys, thank you. It has been a great evening with all of you. So.
Yeah.
Thank you. We'll sign off now.
Okay.
Okay.
Good night, guys.
Good night, guys.
Bye.
Good night.